Hi, this is Elizabeth.
And this is Amy. And in this episode, AADL talks to Karen Jania. Karen worked at the Bentley Historical Library for 27 years and recounts some of her favorite moments from her career. From technological shifts away from the card catalog to online finding aids, Karen witnessed immense changes in library reference services throughout her time there. Now president of the Washtenaw County Historical Society, she also remains active in several other groups in the Ann Arbor area.
Hi, Karen. Thank you for joining us today. What brought you to Ann Arbor initially?
That's a good question. It wasn't school because I went to Michigan State. Actually, I was living with my soon-to-be husband in Northville, and we needed a new place to live. And Ann Arbor's like the cool place. It's the California of Michigan, you know, where all the wild and crazy stuff happens. So it's like, let's go to Ann Arbor. So we did.
That's a good enough reason.
Yeah, I thought so. It was a cool place to be.
Did you eventually end up at SI?
I did. I started actually at the Bentley Library and was there for 3-4 years, I think. And then Bill Wallach said, you know, if you want to hang around here, you're going to have to get your master's degree. So I applied to SI, didn't get in the first time. We won't go into the reasons why, but I didn't. And I'm glad, actually, I didn't get in because I got in 2 years. I think it was 2 years later. And at that point, they had added all the computer stuff. Yeah. And I would have missed out on all the computer classes and the dyad. Was it the dyad where we had the computers?
Ooh, good question, yeah.
I think it was the dyad up there in Harlan Hatcher.
Yeah.
So I got in at a good time. And so I was there actually for, I think, 4 years because I was working full-time and then going to school part-time.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
And then finally I realized it's going to take me like the rest of my life to graduate. So why don't I take an educational leave? And I took a fall term off of work and then just took like 4 or 5 classes that semester.
Oh, that's great. So what were you doing at the Bentley before you got your degree?
When I first started, I was the person, the page. So I was the person who'd take your call slip, go in the stacks, grab your book, box, whatever, and just generally help people. And then also, then they gave me more hours because I started part-time, I think as it was. Mm-hmm. And then they let me do some projects on the Sam Sturgis collection, which was awesome. Just going on. Oh, I know. I was pitching a bitch about there's so many photos in each envelope. So if someone would look at the photos, they have to manhandle, well, not manhandle, but, you know, touch sure. every photo in there when they really wanted one specific. So I'm like, why don't we put a single image in each envelope? And that way you just look at the one you need to see. So they're like, okay, you can do it.
Oh, right.
So okay. I did that and then later got to do some processing and was full-time a while. And then they put me a little bit more strategically in reference. And then that was probably about my 2 or 3 year point or so. And then Bill's like, come on, Karen. So I did. And then actually when I went to SI, when I came back, they actually had created a position in reference for me.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah. So that was pretty cool.
So how many years did you end up working in the reference department?
27 years, just shy of 28 years.
When you first got there, did you know, oh, this is where I want to be, this is what I want to do, or did it come upon you gradually?
Well, my friend Ann Ringia, then Ann Flowers, took me in one Saturday with her, and she was doing work downstairs in the conservation lab, and she let me just kind of fool around in the reading room because no one was there. And so I was just like, well, they got cool stuff here. And then eventually the job opened, and so I got in there, and it's like, I always hated history as a kid. I can't memorize anything. I could remember the Boston Tea Party because I had visuals. But whatever. But then as I was doing reference requests and pulling things for people, it's like, oh, man, look, we've got these Native American photos. We have these old diaries. We've got these old scrapbooks and city directories. And it's like, oh, my goodness. Like, this is awesome. And just fell in love with it. And then this was around the time that Roots came out.
Oh, right.
So then we started getting genealogists in there, which everybody's like, ugh, get them away from me. I was a genealogist. So I would then help these people because at that point there really wasn't anything online yet. Ancestry really wasn't or anything.
Right.
So I would just show them all these resources we had, especially, you know, for Washtenaw County if they had relatives there. And so I would take care of all the genealogists, and then later actually gave talks to genealogy organizations and historical societies. But I just fell in love with it. The more I saw, the more I fell in love. It was pretty cool.
A match made.
How did you first get interested in genealogy?
You know, that's a good question, and I'm not quite sure. I just remember in college, probably like my freshman or sophomore year, anyways, took the bus up to Alma, Michigan, and my grandma was in St. Louis, Michigan, and I visited her for the weekend. And something prompted me to just ask her, so tell me, you know, who were our relatives and whatever. And I still have those papers that I wrote those down on. And through all my moves and craziness, I didn't touch those for almost 10, 15 years before I actually started doing the genealogy. And then I got the bug.
Yeah, that happens.
You know, I'm really into like trivia, and not that I'm a good trivia person, but just into random things and whatever. And so it was just like perfect for me in detective work. So it was really a lot of fun.
They must have been happy that they had somebody at the Bentley who would take those questions.
Well, yeah, because we really had a lot that lends themselves to genealogy, and got some fun stories out of the job I would do. You know, like, this took you to this, to that, to this, to the other thing. And I remember Nancy Bartlett sometimes like, you need to write this down. You need to tell the story. But yeah, it was a lot of fun.
So what was it like working at the Bentley while you were there? And how did things change over time?
Well, like when I first started, computers really weren't. There were like a couple. And it's like, but we didn't have one in reference, I think, for almost like a year maybe. And it was all the DOS nonsense.
Oh, my gosh. Right.
So I would be at the reference desk while Nancy was on her break or whatever. It's like, and I'd shout across the room, Diane, how do I get this thing to turn on? What do I type in? Because there were no icons. It's, you had to, you know, do the command-driven stuff. It's like, that was nonsense. But it was quieter then. We didn't have Merlin terminals at that point,
right.
I don't believe. I'm pretty sure those came after I'd been there for a bit. So it was the card catalog and just a lot of hands-on. And then things that just seemed to get busier, I think, as time went on. And then we got the Merlin terminals. And so then instructing people how to use Merlin, which at the time I really had my doubts. Because if you want to know about the Civil War, pull out the Civil War card catalog drawer and you could just flip through and find all kinds of stuff. You do that on Merlin, there's like a couple thousand hits.
Right.
You know, so you couldn't really do a keyword. Yeah, it was kind of crazy. So then I myself learned, okay, what's best in the card catalog? And then what's really best in Merlin? And really got a handle on that. Some things were better in the card catalog, some but were better on Merlin. If, you know, just, and then eventually the card catalogs disappeared. I was going to chain myself up to them, but I didn't.
So, wow, you saw a lot of transition. What were finding aids like at the time? And can you... Yeah.
So the finding aids, I'm dating myself here. It's pre-EAD. I think now I can't remember what they call it now. But anyways, so it was just a listing box by box. And you could go, and I used the Sturgis a lot. I used Ivory a lot.
Yeah.
But you could go page by page and flip through. And so you could look at a couple different pages at a time and kind of have your fingers, blah, blah. And they're extremely helpful. But then once you got EAD and could do it online, you could do keyword searches, which really helped in the finding aids. Because then if it said a certain thing, it would bring up every time it said that on whatever pages it was on.
For our listeners, can you tell us what EAD is?
Encoded Archival Description. I remembered.
Yay.
Whereas before it was just strictly a box listing. As they'd fill a box, then they type in all the folder headings, and they just did that. And then once they started doing the EAD, then they retrofitted all the previous finding aids because they were in Word, and then they had to put all the gooky HTML stuff in, kind of reformat it. But they left, anyways. Yeah, so it was a big transition to get all the finding aids. I'm trying to think how many finding aids there were. There were like, what, about 3 feet?
Oh.
Each shelf was 3 feet. There were probably 3-4 shelves easily.
Wow.
Of finding aids. And then some collections, I think it was G-Min and Williams, or not G-Min and Williams, Milliken, had multiple finding aids because there were multiple parts of the collection.
Can you tell us a little bit, can you walk us through like a typical day in the life of a reference librarian at the Bentley, maybe, you know, after the computers came.
Yeah.
Came. And, you know, what you did and what you particularly enjoyed doing.
Yeah. So it's funny, we had to be there at the same time the library opened. So you had to be there a couple of minutes early because without fail, there's going to be someone at the door who wanted to come in like as soon as you were there or before you got there. But so we go in, and once I was doing the reference desk, like pretty much full time, so I'd come in, and if there was someone there, we'd get them registered, show them how to fill out, if they weren't already, and typically take their driver's license and clip it to the registration card, and then show them how to fill out finding aid, or call slips, which is the little form you filled out to request the items you wanted. And some people like, oh, no, I'm all set. And other people like, well, you know, I'm interested in da-da-da. It's like, well, okay, come on over here. Let's talk. Tell me what you know, and then ask and let me know what it is you're looking for. So we do a little brainstorming. And it's like, oh, okay, yeah, you want the such and such collection. Or, you want the such and such collection. You want this part of it. Anyway, so we kind of do some deep diving, and then I'd eventually show them the finding aid and show them how to fill out the call slip. And then they'd go sit at their table and do their thing, and then they'd come up and bring call slips to us. And we could get one box at a time, or we could get several books at a time.
Okay.
We also had maps or whatever. But so then they'd come up to the desk, give me the call slip. I'd find the location. We had what we called a location guide up at the desk. So you would look up the collection, and because, as it turns out, collections come in bits and pieces. So you might have this collection on shelf whatever, and then a few years later we get some more from them, so it's on some shelf totally far away. So you'd look in the finding aid under the name of the collection and then the box number, so you could get the exact location of where that particular box was.
Right.
And then take it to the back of the room to our page, and then they'd go in the stacks and grab it for someone. And then once they found their things, of course, then they wanted photocopies. So I'd grab a photocopy form, show them how to do it, because we did all the photocopying, because they're primary sources. We want everything in the original order that we had them, and they couldn't photocopy themselves. We had to do it for them. Mm-hmm. So show them how to take care of all that and where to put it when they were done. Then in the meantime, there were usually phone calls or emails, and we would get quite a few email requests. And so I would do a quick response that we're in receipt of your request. You know, we'll get back with you as soon as we can. And I'd print those out and either give it to someone or I'd work on it myself. Phone calls, we used to do actually a request like live on the phone. And then one time, this was earlier before that, but there was this one time this woman was interested in, I think it was the Friends house in Ann Arbor, and looked in Merlin. I couldn't find anything. And then later, it was, I guess, during the lunch hour, which is why I was on the desk that time. And then later it's like, oh, wait a minute, in the vertical file, which are in these filing cabinets in the reading room, and just, you guys know what it is. But yep. For those who don't, it's just kind of random folders, just odds and ends kinds of things that just we've accumulated from wherever. And I found a folder in there kind of with the information she was looking for. But I hadn't taken her phone number, didn't know her name. So we kind of talked about it and said, well, from now on, we need to ask people to put their request in writing. Send us an email. So that way too, we know exactly what they're asking. And then it reminds them exactly what they were requesting. Because sometimes they do it on the phone. We'd either call them back or send them an email. It's like, well, that's not what I wanted.
Oh, my gosh. We've been there.
You know, so we thought just if everything's in writing, be it paper and, paper and pen or email, then it's very clear what they want. And we can, you know, answer back. And then we saved all those requests and answers in another set of filing cabinets. Because without fail, someone would come back. They would come back maybe later on a different question, or someone would have a similar one. And it's like, oh, wait a minute. I think we had that same query a couple of years ago, and it was so-and-so. I had a really good memory for that stuff. And we'd go back, and we could find this what it was. And so we'd use old letters. And we kind of hung on to those forever.
Did you ever automate those so that you could find them then online? Or, you know, or in your system?
I'm going to say no, but that being said, I saved everything in my email.
Oh, right.
So in my own personal email, well, my UMich email, I could go back and, you know, look for things. But then as a result of a lot of people asking the same questions, especially U of M history at the beginning, it's like, well, okay, so on our website, and I'd learned about websites at SCI, you know, they were just kind of coming into being then, we created a website for reference. So I did one page that was U of M related. Mm-hmm. So it was first of the university. It was women, it was sports, whatever, but those things that we get asked time and time again.
Sure.
So it saved time for us, because then we could just ourselves go to that page and tell them the information, you know, if it was a quick thing. Or we could tell them, oh, well, here, go to this page, you'll find information on that. And often there would be a hot link maybe taking them to another collection or to a finding aid or something.
Right.
Smart. And so, yeah, so just as, it's, and then later it blossomed into just things on women, religion, just all kinds of stuff. It's cool. No longer there anymore. But it, but it was really good. But it was really based on it was on demand kind of stuff. So
sure.
These people, you know, we get the question over and over again. Let's put it online. It's silly for us to keep, you know, answering the same thing. Plus, I did auto text entries, which you could do in Word at that time. You could do like type three letters and then it would pull up a little paragraph you'd created. So if someone wanted to know about automotive history, there's a couple things we always would say. This way we'd always say them the same. Maybe we typed in auto, and it would say, oh, the Walter Reuther, or blah, 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 or if you're interested in trains, there'd be a little thing. So we'd have these auto text entries, too. So sometimes writing a letter was like, dear auto text, blah, 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 auto text. So it really streamlined the things, and then that way we're all saying the same thing the same way.
Right.
Do you remember any reference questions that stand out to you as, like, strange or interesting?
Oh, gosh, there were so many. Well, there was one that led, I think it was a reference question, or else I was working with John Crick on his book, Natural Enemies, and it was about football. And through my research, found out that not everyone who played football in the early days was on the football team. It was like some big hulky guy walking down the street.
Oh, Jesus.
It's like, hey, you want to play this Saturday? You didn't hear that from me, though. But but there were fun things, though, connections like from women. We also had the alumni surveys, which was a survey given to all women in 1924, I believe it was, who'd ever attended or was currently attending university. And it was a four-page thing, and it asked them their name, their religion, their ethnicity. And that was a new word, because I think it was in 1924 is when Congress came up with that ethnic definition. So it'd say, you know, what's your ethnic? And they'd say German or Scottish. You know, people didn't really know what that meant. But then it'd ask about their memories of attending the university. Did they have family members? And then what kind of what they went on to do later in life. So some of those would take me on just this, like, rabbit hole. So I read that. It's like, oh, my gosh. So we have a necrology file. Then the necrology, necrology files are these little cards primarily before the 1920s, so like from 1840 or whatever. And it would be the information they filled out sometimes in their own hand, and sometimes it would be a little picture of them. But you get into that, and then it, and then sometimes it's like, oh, well, let me look in the old yearbook. Is there something about them in there? Yeah. So some of these, I guess the fun ones, it would just take you down a rabbit hole. And there were lots of rabbit holes to be found. So that, yeah. That was fun.
I found my grandfather's 1924 report card.
Did you really?
And his registration form. It was great.
There aren't a whole lot of report cards in there. And they were on vellum back then.
Yeah, it
I
was
bet.
Crazy.
Yeah.
The other thing related to what Elizabeth just asked, I mean, you could argue that the head reference librarian would know where all the bodies were buried. Were there any things that you found in the collection or that you think people would be surprised to know, other than, like you just mentioned, the necrology file? Are there other things you discovered over the years?
Well, yeah, there were lots. Some of them, too, were just like the non-U of M collections we had there. For instance, there were some physicians' books. And so when they went to visit people, they'd write down who it was and what the ailment was.
Oh, wow.
There was another professor slash doctor at the university, and he had, I can't think of his name now, but he had all this, like this stuff, you know, all the stuff that he observed while, you know, taking care of people and things. I found somebody's little receipt to get out of the war, Civil War. They paid someone to take their spot.
Oh, wow.
Just
stuff like that. And
fun maps and like scrapbooks. One in particular that I used to use for classes all the time was Marguerite Lambert. If you're a genealogist or have been for a long time, you might know her name. She gathered a lot of genealogical resources and names. She went through some of the early newspapers and collected names of who got married or who died and then put them in this booklet. And anyway, so she also attended the university around, I think, 1915. So in her scrapbook, There would be like a napkin from some special dinner she went to. There might be a little wrapper from a piece of chocolate, a little piece of driftwood. I mean, just all kinds of little dance cards. Oh, dance cards were very cool. We'd find dance cards in some of those things. And they're like, what about 2x3? And with a little pencil attached often. And so the girls, and sometimes guys would have the guys sign their cards that they'd reserve the dance. And girls would have a contest, like, who can get their card filled and who has the coolest guys, you know? And then later we collected a lot of those. And actually in the vertical file, then there was just like a whole folder of just these dance cards. Some were leather, little leather cover. Some were just little paper.
Wow. And during your time, were there any acquisitions that, you know, just everybody was buzzing about, that people were really excited about at the Bentley?
There were. The one that comes out most, because it was the more recent, was John Dingell.
Okay.
And we got his papers. We got the James Blanchard papers while I was there, too. And I got to work on those. I got to help process those. And because there were so many boxes, they were out at the beer building before it had been, like, revamped.
Sure.
So Matt Schaefer and I were literally in a cage about the size of this room. In a cage. It was a cage. They could lock us in if they wanted. But all the boxes were there, so he and I would go down there, I don't know, maybe mornings or something, and we'd go through the collection. And that was really fun, because then I really got to focus on the Upper Peninsula part of his collection.
Oh, cool.
Because that's kind of a passion of mine. And so, yeah, it was just... And we get all the governors.
Yeah.
So that was kind of a thing with the state archives. But what we got was their personal papers. We didn't get the actual official gubernatorial kind of things.
Oh, wow.
I think that's right. But anyways, we kind of worked out a deal with them. But yes, I guess some more political papers. Oh, and then John Sinclair. Mm-hmm. His came a little bit before me, but that was another one that was just like, woo, yeah. People went crazy over that.
What was it like working with Fran Bluen and some of the other colleagues that you had at the Bentley?
I can't say enough good stuff about Fran. He's such a wonderful person. I actually got to interview him when I was at Psy about how he did his administration. And, you know, he's laid back, but really on top of things. You know, he really knows his stuff. And he would, you know, tell me about how he would go to the different units and make them aware of who the Bentley was so that they could bring their papers to the Bentley so that we could, or their records actually, so that we could, you know, keep those for posterity or whatever. Anyways, he was just wonderful in his guidance. He was out a lot because he was often on campus doing things. Bill Wallach was the associate director right then. And he was awesome too. Whenever I had a problem, I was like, Bill. And he's always there to help me. I had lots of great mentors there. And it was really like a family. It really, really was like a family. For the most part, anyone who was professional there, if they left, it's because they became a director at another place.
Oh, wow.
Like Chris Weideman went to Yale. Frank Bowles went to Mount Pleasant. And that's about it. Really, that's about it that left. People just stayed there. They loved their work. And it was, like I say, really, it was like a big family. We'd have potlucks on occasion. We had teas, I think maybe twice a week, once a week, whatever it was. We'd have a holiday party, like the last day before Christmas that we worked. We'd work half day and then go to someone's house and have a pizza party. And everyone was really willing to share their knowledge and their information, which was great because that's not true everywhere, and I've experienced that. But, you know, if I had an issue with an acquisition, I could go talk to Tom Powers, and he'd look things up, or often he knew it off the top of his head. Brian Williams was another one who came after me, but he was very up on university archives. Greg Kinney was sports, so often I would take his place, like when he was on vacation, at that point, take the sports thing later, Brian did. But, yeah, everyone just kind of pitched in it for everybody and just helped you. And if you had a question or whatever, it was really a wonderful place to live. I loved it. I lived there.
That's okay, yeah. But that tells a lot.
But it was, yeah. It was, and a lot of us worked there forever and ever. I mean,
yeah,
there was really, turnover would be grad students.
Now, before we leave the topic of the Bentley at all, I just wanted to ask you a little bit about the Ivory photo collection and the Sturgis collection. Can you tell us, because we would love to be able to, you know, work with the Bentley and scan some of that stuff, but I know that people love those collections. Can you tell us a little bit about what's in there?
Sure. So Sam Sturgis was himself a photographer. However, his collection is just that. He collected photographs. So he collected things back to like the 1880s when it was pictures of glass cases in the medical department, which was a department back then, of whatever was
whatever.
Glass jars and things. Lots of campus photos, quite a bit of Ann Arbor, but if people are familiar with, they were little kind of white books. They were horizontal book. There's like Old Ann Arbor Town or whatever. And
yeah,
those, and Hazel Proctor, if I'm not mistaken, is the one who put those out. But the photos were from the Sam Sturgis collection.
Okay.
And I dare say any old Ann Arbor photo that you see that's black and white, it's probably from the Sam Sturgis collection.
Okay.
So that's really the best overall documentation of the university and the city of Ann Arbor
by far.
And there's some Chelsea and Dexter, but primarily Ann Arbor and the old Ann Arbor and the old university.
Okay, and the ivory?
So the ivory, and if I'm not mistaken, it was brothers at one point, and I think they had attended the university, but don't quote me on that, but I think that's right. But ivory photo, I think it was on Main Street, like closer to the stadium, but down that way. And they took photographs of houses and buildings. That was a good portion of it. I think I don't know if it's for insurance purposes or what. So if you're looking for a photo of a house, that might be a really good place to look. They also took photos of people and events. So, and that would be like, say, 1930s, around that time period. Okay. One of the fun photos I found in there on Linwood Street, there's kind of like a little stone castle-y kind of house. It's kind of I think it's like stone. Anyways, it's kind of an odd little house. And that photo was in ivory. It's like, oh my gosh, there it is, you know. And so you could find fun photos of, like I say, old homes. There were some sports in there, some people. Susan Weinberg actually processed that collection when it came in.
Yeah.
I think as a volunteer. I don't think she actually worked at the Bentley.
Yeah, she mentioned that, I think.
And so she went to a lot of description.
Yeah.
So for the houses, it would have the address. If it was people, she would have the event and who was in it. So
amazing.
So the Sturgis would be like, say, the older. And then kind of about where that stops is then where ivory kind of takes over.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah. But they're both excellent collections. Just excellent.
Maybe related.
Yeah.
Some of these photos might be in this project. You worked on the Downtown Historical Streets exhibit.
I did, yeah.
Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. So it was Amy and Louisa Piper and
Ray Detter.
Yeah, those were the big three.
Grace and Susan.
Oh yeah, Grace.
Course,
and, yeah,
there and were Louisa Piper.
Yeah. Okay, so I have a pretty good memory. So once I've seen a photograph, I know where to find it again.
Oh, yeah.
Where a lot of collections aren't that detailed. So, except for Sturgis and Ivory, then you can pretty much find them. For the most part. But any other collection with photos, it's not item level. So when they came in, they would tell me what kind of photos they're looking for, what the subject matter was. So I would tell them collections that I knew for sure that would have things, but then also maybe give them ideas of how to search better on Merlin to find things. It was a fun project, and I love seeing those all around town. They're just, except the ones that are all like
broken,
crackled.
Somebody ran into them. Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, I thought that was a really awesome project. And it's just fun, like I say, for people just to walk around and say like, oh my gosh, that was here, you know, like 100 years ago or whatever.
You know, and that reminds me too that we worked on the making of Ann Arbor.
Yes, we did. I was going to say that,
Bollinger, was it Bollinger? I forgot. It was a mandate. It was something they wanted the university and the city to work together on.
And we did.
And we did.
And I remember the first meeting in the Whiting Room.
Yep.
Jewett was there. Michael Jewett's dad. Coleman Jewett was there. They're just people from the library, people from education. And so we basically took the book that the Bentley did for the sesquicentennial and then illuminated that. We put hot links in to maybe give definitions of words. We had the library go through and add what they thought should be added because they know what their patrons ask for at the library. So it was really collaborative. And it was really great work. And then Amy and I had all these plans of doing additions to it that never...
What happened?
We were going to do education and, you know, all these kind of cool...
And then it kind of cooled off. But things changed eventually.
Yeah. But it's a great website. And I send people there a lot. And it's great.
It's got some nice text we added a lot of historical
text. A lot of text. Yeah. And then as a result, you have that little kind of like image bank with it. So you could just look at images if you want. They're on the library's page, I believe, or it used to be anyways. But yeah, that was a very cool project. And it was really great working with the library.
Yeah.
Just so many, because we'd never worked together before. It's like, why not?
Why not?
You know, we're these two major resources in town. Like, we need to work together. And so we have it now, even at the Washtenaw County Historical Society. We have a collaborative with the library, too. It's just, like, such a resource. You guys are awesome.
Yeah.
You really are.
Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, it seems like a good segue into talking about your work at the Washtenaw County Historical Society.
Yeah. I've been in there since 2008. Started as just a regular board member for a year. And then I went into programs. So Ralph Beebe, who had been the program person before, kind of showed me how to do the things or, you know, what you do. So I was the one who arranged the programs and found a place because at the time we were trying to get, like, out in Manchester or get in Chelsea so that we're not just focusing on Ann Arbor because it's for the whole county. So it was a lot of that. And then did that for a few years. And I've been president for like 5 years now, I think. It's been really rewarding. And again, working with the library, and now we always have a place to have our program.
Yeah.
Like, Amy, can we get a room? And then getting things digitized. It's been a great relationship.
And you have the Museum of Main Street, and you were president then through the pandemic and everything. How'd that go? Can you talk a little
bit about that? We got way more done than we expected to get done during, because we were going to do voting rights, whatever amendment that is. I can't remember right now. I haven't had enough coffee yet. but so we had this exhibit all planned, you know, and. But we couldn't have it because we're closed. It's COVID time.
Right.
So Bev Willis, Judy Christman, and myself were a little bubble. And we would bubble ourselves over to the library. So we would set up the exhibit. But then we would take photos. And then Bev made the exhibit online.
Mm-hmm.
So all that was online. And that was very cool. So we did a few things then and did them as website or for the website. So we actually did get some things done. And it gave us time, too, to also think about maybe how we might reuse the space at the library. But then programs kind of dropped off
right.
as a result of that. And then we were mired in with the Argus collection. And that's no longer a part of us now. They've separated so they can really flourish and blossom and go their own way. So our big thing is once our exhibit is up and running, which will be October 29th for the 200th exhibit.
Okay.
Then we're going to start doing programs again. And we actually have a little bicentennial committee. In fact, we just met last night. And they've got plans. And we've decided instead of having like two programs in the fall, two in the spring, we're going to have a program every month.
Okay.
A couple will be large. Some will be small. Some might just be at the museum on Main Street.
Mm-hmm.
And might just be some little thing where someone comes to talk. One of the things we're thinking about was for the 4th of July, reading the Constitution.
Nice.
And Will Hathaway, who's now on the board, they have Hathaway's Hideaway, which is on Ashley, I believe it is,
mm-hmm.
or for, I think it's Ashley. And that used to be a voting place. That's where people went to vote. That was its purpose. And so we will have that done there and maybe even a program there as well. So we're going to try to do just lots of things commemorating Ann Arbor. Our exhibit is just going to be for the first 50, oh, I'm letting the cat out of the box. No, it's for the first 50 years of Ann Arbor's history. Everybody knows from like 1874 on, I mean, there's lots of stuff about that, but it's those first 50 years, there's not a whole lot of information, and a lot of people really don't know much, but we do have things in there. So we're going to set up like a little section on lighting. What did people do for lighting for those first 50 years?
Cool.
Candles, kerosene lamp kind of thing, and we'll have little sections, just little of those various things, of kind of like day-to-day life the first 50 years of Ann Arbor.
Oh, that sounds great.
Yeah. Oh. So anyway, so now we're really gearing up to kind of, again, now that we can really do things with the public, we're trying to really gear up and make a difference.
Will that start in January, or are you going to wait and unveil it a little further into the year?
The exhibit will come out on the 29th, will open on the 29th, and then
Of this year,
October. Like, yeah.
Oh, gotcha.
Like, real soon.
Okay.
So that's 2023, and this will air in 2024, for people listening.
Yeah, sorry about that. Yeah, so you still have time to go. Go and see the exhibit.
Right.
And we will take some things out. We'll kind of shuffle the exhibit up just a little bit during the year so that people could come more than one time and see something maybe a little bit different.
Gotcha.
And then we're also in the process of the back room. It's kind of morphing into like a research area. So we're hoping, too, with more traffic coming in for the bicentennial and people coming to see this, that we'll get more people interested in actually kind of sitting there looking at some of the holdings we have. So we're trying to think about how to really make that work. But when people come, we always have some plat books or city directories out.
Right.
And people go nuts. And they'll sit and look, or they'll look at the maps and stuff. So, yeah, we really want to hone that in.
What do you think are the most interesting collections there after working at the Bentley?
Well, we have lots of artifacts, which the Bentley really doesn't. There's a couple, but they really don't have artifacts. They just collect papers and photos and things. So we do have some great photos, but we have some old dollhouses. We have old toys. There's some really great textiles, some beautiful dresses, like from the 1880s. In fact, maybe it was like COVID summer when things loosened up a little bit. We had a woman come in and bring her mother's wedding gown. She was married here in town, and we got some photos. And anyways, it was just some cool stuff. So, yeah, it's the artifacts. There's some just really awesome artifacts. And old tools.
Sure.
Just, yeah. Kerosene. Anyways, just lots of fun stuff. But it's the artifacts, yeah. Lots of great artifacts.
So what's the best part about working there? I mean, you sound very enthusiastic about the exhibits and all. But
again, it's many of us, I don't want to say most, but many of us on the board have been there longer than me. I've been there since 2008. Actually, there's a great group of people. Patty and Bob Creel are on the board, and they're both Ann Arborites from the get-go.
Right, right.
So they bring a lot of history and a lot of knowledge of the area to the table.
Yeah.
Will has his skills. He's, I think, supervisor for Scioto Township. Mm-hmm. So everyone kind of comes with their own skill set. So it's a great bunch of people to work with. And then we also get queries on our website. We now have Ask a Historian.
Mm-hmm.
So if it's about a house, a specific house, those go to Susan.
Susan, yeah.
Those go to Susan. That is by far her expertise.
We send a lot to Susan, too. Yes.
But if it's something else, then I typically will answer those.
Okay.
And then trying to get these kind of like auto text entries I was talking about,
yeah.
Trying to get something kind of comparable on the website.
Sure.
Well, I guess it wouldn't be that. It'd be more of like a study guide of sorts. So like if you're interested in whatever, these are like the websites are the places to look for. Or if you want to find this, city directories, and give them the link that you guys have to the city directory so you can see them all online.
Sure, sure.
But do like little study guides and stuff. But yeah, it's just a great group of people to work with. And like
fun.
I say, I hated history when I was a kid, but I love it now.
Yeah.
Just love it now.
Are there other groups or projects that you've worked on in the city that we haven't asked you about yet? That you...
Like unrelated?
Yeah.
Like Ann Arbor Farm and Garden?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. Well, I'm on Ann Arbor Farm and Garden.
What do you do there?
Not this past year because my daughter had a baby, but I've helped on the garden walk in particular, and I'm also their historian.
Of course.
Surprise, surprise. So I'm on the board of that. And it's a really great... we have great programs, I think. Spotlight, ones like the Palmer House, we'd have someone come and talk about that. We've had a connection with the botanical gardens, especially the peony part.
Sure.
The big celebration they had, we gave them a big chunk of change that we got from the garden walk. The main purpose of that is money for scholarships, or grants rather. So schools, organizations will come to us and say, we really want to start this garden. We want to teach our children about gardening or something along those lines. And then we'll look at all the grants we got, decide who we want to grant, or fund rather, and then we'll give them X number of dollars. And we knew about the peony celebration a good 5-6 years in advance. So every year we'd grab like $5,000, I think, and kind of put that aside for the peonies. Because I want to say we gave them $20,000, but again, don't quote me on that. So that's another aspect. And then I know there's, AAUW.
Okay, yeah.
And so the book sale. Yes. So last year, I was the head of the book sale. And, of course, that's the first year that vets couldn't let us do sorting there, so we had to find a new place.
Mm-hmm.
That was a nightmare, but it all worked out. But also, I was the chair for the 2 years previous, And we get all worked up. It's like, nope, COVID. Sorry, can't do it. It's like, oh, really? So for 3 years. But yeah, I did it the 1 year. So I've been very active in particular with the book sale. And we had a real good book sale this year, which is at Washtenaw Community College the first weekend after Labor Day.
Okay.
Yeah. And that money goes to scholarships for women and men going to Eastern Washtenaw Community College in U of M.
Great.
Yeah.
Wow.
I'm also involved in my church. But
there. You're really busy.
Too busy.
And you have some grandkids now?
I do. I just had one born June 29th.
Congratulations.
Big Helen. She was like 9 pounds, 10 ounces. and then my son has 2 girls. Oh, and they're 9 and 4. But yeah. Yeah. So I do my grandma visits.
Can you talk about if you remember any favorite projects that stand out throughout your whole career that you worked on?
One that was really fun at the Bentley was working with Greg Kinney on the football program covers.
Oh, okay.
So back in the day, there were these artistic, colorful paintings, whatever. And they, some years it was kind of a Norman Rockwell look. Another time it was this strange, like architectural, Russian-influenced, whatever. But we went through the various decades, and we did this exhibit that took you all through the Bentley. And then actually then put it online as well. And that was just really fun going through all these old football because I'm into football, but not I'm not a rah-rah, you know, one of those. But it was just tremendous fun. And working with Greg was a lot of fun, too. That's one that kind of comes to mind. But there were several, actually. Well, then another one, we did an exhibit in the Whiting Room near the end of Fran's tenure, kind of the history of the university. So it was going through and finding old photographs, and then we'd get them dry mounted and what and blown up and to tell a story of the university's history. And that was a really great project, too.
You've had a lot of fun.
I have. And I had wonderful grad students that could help me out when my technical skills were a little slight. Or didn't even know them yet.
So what are you most proud of over your career?
I guess making a difference in people's appreciation of history. There for a while I did some class, or not did, but I had some classes from community, I think it was Community High that came in, and they would have 7th and 8th graders come in. And remember we set up the reading, I set up the reading room, and so one was, their project was kind of doing a genealogy of some of the old corner stores that used to be in Ann Arbor that aren't anymore, but most of them you can kind of identify just by how they look. So I had a map of maps of Ann Arbor for different time periods so they could look on a map and see what the streets were like. There was one table that had city directories, and there were photographs, probably Sam Sturgis. We had some of those out. Or maybe Ivory, I guess, because probably the time period would have been Ivory. And then one table, I just had some old things out, like some Civil War letters. And there was a book about Motown that someone had used collections at the Bentley to write the book. So just kind of showing them different things. But there was this one girl. And so, you know, I was with her like, oh, well, you know, so here's a Civil War letter. Like, how old is that? And she starts counting on her fingers. I'm like, no, it's over 100 years old, right? And they're like, yeah. I'm like, look, this is over 100 years old. And they're like, and you could just see the, you know, and then when I would do classes, I'd work with faculty and they'd bring a class in to do research. So I would do a class for them in the Whiting Room, explain how to use finding aids, how to fill out the call slips, and just how to do critical thinking. And we'd do several exercises. And there was this one guy that was trying to find something out about Hillel Society. And we had the Hillel papers there. And I don't know if he was trying to find out who was somebody at some point in time or whatever. But so I'd worked a lot with him and trying to steer him in the right direction. And I'll never forget, I was sitting at the reference desk one day, and he was there studying. All of a sudden, he jumps up. And he's like, yes! He's like, well, I guess he found what he was looking for. So it was just, I guess, to see people get engaged in history to really help facilitate that. Because like I say, I hated history as a kid. I never had anyone to really engage me. So I felt that helping people engage in history and learn from history was a big deal.
Oh, that's wonderful.
So that was really important to me, yeah.
Well, thank you,
Karen.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're very welcome.
AADL Talks 2 is a production of the Ann Arbor District Library.